Hi, this is Mike Franke, and you're listening to Everybody Talking. My guest today is singer-songwriter, luthier, and longtime member of the Southwest Virginia Songwriters Association, Larry Sakayama. Larry joins us in October 2020 via Zoom to talk about his song, Missing You. Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Good. Hey, thanks so much for doing this today, Larry.
Oh, thanks for asking me. It's a really cool idea, actually.
Well, I've been thinking about doing this for a long time.
Am I the first one?
You are.
So what I'd like to do tonight is talk about the song, obviously, how you wrote the song and so forth. But I want to back up from there because you're an interesting guy, Larry.
Is that good or bad?
No, that's good. And I'd kind of like to find out a little bit more about you that I don't already know and also capture some things that I do know. I mean, I know you as Southwest Virginia Songwriters Association guy, an SVSA member, ex-president, one of the best I've ever experienced, by the way. How long have you been a member of the SVSA?
I don't really know. Probably for about 14 or 15 years.
Right. Well, you have been there as long as I've been there, and I've been here for 13 years.
I remember when you came. I also remember my first meeting.
Really?
Yeah, where I showed up, and I felt like a complete outsider. And I was almost ignored. It was weird. And I came home that night and I told Sal, I don't think I'm going back.
Wow. That's too bad. What changed your mind?
Well, I went back and I remember at one point telling the guys who seemed like they were the regulars and the institution, I just said, you know, if you want to attract more people, you gotta make people feel welcome.
Right, right.
And ultimately, when you say something like that, you end up being coaxed into being president.
Yeah, that's what you get, I guess.
What'd you think of being president of the Songwriters Association?
You know, I thought it was good. It forced me to think more about what other people needed.
Yes.
You know, some of the stuff
that
I thought, well, help me. Maybe it'll help someone else, you know, and getting workshops, you know, done. And
what was the hardest part about being president?
Just trying to keep everything moving, you know, and interesting.
Yep. So the Songwriters Association has been a part of your life, and you've been a part of its life for as long as I've known it. But I also know there's a part of you, I can see the studio behind you there. There is an entire other interview that we could do about the side of you that is a luthier and a builder of other things. I mean, you build guitars and other instruments and boats. How did you get into all of that? How did you get into it? Because I got to tell you, for me, somebody building a guitar is magic. I cannot see a piece of wood and imagine an instrument.
Well, you know, it's like everything else. If you break it down into small steps, and every step is not so, you know, so amazing.
Right. Well, there's a life lesson, huh?
But how I got into it, I'll tell you exactly. I had always been interested in woodworking, but never built anything of any note, and nothing noteworthy. Small projects with the kids. And
okay, yeah.
So then it was around 2006 or 2005. We live on a lake, so Sally and I were talking about getting kayaks. I knew nothing about kayaks, so I start, you know, Googling it, looking around, and I see this picture of a wooden kayak.
A wooden kayak.
I'm thinking, holy cow, that is so cool. I want a kayak like that. So I bought the book. I read the book about four times, trying to figure out if there was any way I could really do this. And then I thought, man, building a kayak may be a little tough. Let me try to build a canoe instead. So they have canoes that are called open kayaks. They paddle like a kayak, but they have no deck on top.
Oh, okay. So they're simpler.
You know, you don't have to build a hull and then a deck and then mate them together.
Right.
So I bought these bunch of books and I read them all a bunch of times. And then I said, well, heck, why don't I just try to build it?
Just like that.
So it was the kayak building. That was my first real woodworking. And I didn't have many tools at that time. I had a table saw and a router, which is what I needed to build the kayak.
Okay, yeah.
And so I'm building this thing, and I remember I was building it in the garage because the shop and studio weren't built. And Sally opens the garage door from the house.
Yeah.
And she says, are you having any fun out here? And I said, yeah, I really am. And she said, it doesn't sound like it because I was cursing all the time. Well, that's what happens when you think everything's going wrong. You know, there'd be times when I would be building the boat and something wouldn't be right. And I just couldn't stand it, you know, and I'd stop for a couple of weeks while I just thought about how I'm going to fix it.
That's part of the fun, huh?
But anyway, so I'm building this boat and I'm coming to the final stages where I, you know, the typical canoe has a small deck on each, the bow and the stern, right? And I was just walking down the boat, tapping my hand on it. And I came to that little deck and I tapped on it. And I said, oh man, it sounds like a guitar top. So I said, maybe I can make a guitar top out of some of these strips of wood. So I took some of the leftover wood. So as I'm building the canoe, I had all these strips of wood and that were unused. I started gluing them together into just a flat surface to make a decent guitar top. And I made a couple of them. Some of them were really, you know, when you take the wood and you tap on it, sometimes they ring and sometimes they just thud.
Okay.
Well, I built a couple that were just, you know, thudding away. And then I built one that sort of rang when I hit it. And I said, okay. So I put that aside. And when I finished the boat, I started using the leftover wood from the boat to build to build a guitar. And it took me 3 years to build that first guitar. In fact, where is it?
Oh, you have it there?
In fact, it's here.
Awesome.
I don't know if you can see, but there are.
Wow, look at that.
There were 22 strips of wood across the top.
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing.
So that's my first instrument.
Yeah, yeah. That's the magic to me.
And it's all built from leftover wood. The bridge is a piece of cherry from a skid. The top is all leftover cedar from the boat. The sides, you know, when I built this one, I thought, I'm never going to be able to bend sides, you know.
Never, right.
So I had this pack of veneers that I bought for really cheap from a woodworking company. If I really don't know if I can bend a side, but I have these veneers and they're really bendable. And so I glued four each of the veneers to make a side. I made a form. And it's really hard unless you have proper equipment to press evenly across the curved surface. So I ended up with bubbles in the veneer. I ended up slicing them with a box knife and then squirting glue underneath and then taping them down and putting weights on them and all sorts of stuff. But anyway, the back is walnut and a cherry strip. This walnut, because of this crazy rain in it, Chet was going to put it in his fireplace.
Oh, no.
So he asked me if I wanted it, and I said, sure, I'll take it. And
that's great.
The neck is a piece of mahogany also left over from building my boat.
Okay. Now, even I can tell, knowing you, knowing a little bit about you, that that must be one of your earlier models, because it doesn't have either of your signature sound holes that we know you for.
Yeah.
Can you hold one of the others up so I can look at that? That hold has the top and the front side holes? Yeah, that one.
So there's the side sound port.
Side sound port. And one of the cool things about that when you're playing it is that you can hear, oh, and that one actually looks like it has a regular sound.
It looks like it, but it's fake.
Fake. Yes.
This sound hole also serves as the cutaway.
Right. Let your hand get up on the neck. Yep. And now, was that your idea or did you copy that from somebody?
Yeah, there's a Tim Wagner. You might know him because he came to an SVSA meeting once, I think.
Sounds familiar.
But he's a guitar maker and repair guy in Stanton. Yeah. And he showed me a guitar that he made like that. And he said he didn't invent it. He said he saw a French guy make a guitar like that. Anyway, so my thought about this hole is that the guitar top has to vibrate like a speaker, right? Kind of. It needs to push air. That's what makes the sound. And you put a hole here and you eliminate a fair amount of that vibrating surface. And so
you weaken the top, the structure.
I mean, most of the sound is produced down here.
Yeah.
In the lower bout, but you know, that's a significant amount of space. So I did a couple of things. I took the sound hole, moved it over here.
Yeah, you moved it up
and
on
then
top.
I don't know if you can see this.
Look at that. The neck doesn't,
the fretboard is not,
it does, it's suspended. Right.
It's not touching the soundboard. Right. So I figured that, you know, my theory is that now the whole top can vibrate.
And did you get the results you
expected?
What's that? Did you get the results you expected? Does it sound like you wanted it?
Yes and no. This one I did. I think it sounds bigger than the guitar looks. It's a small body parlor size guitar. But it has a pretty decent sound. I don't know if we can tell over Zoom or not.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. Sounds bigger than it is. You're right, like you said.
Yeah, and I made another one that a friend of mine has in Florida. And he says that thing sounds bigger than his jumbo.
Yeah, that's really cool, Larry. Someday I hope to commission you to make me a guitar once I ever figure out what I want exactly. So tell me this. I think of you as this Renaissance man kind of guy because you're a luthier and a songwriter, but you were also in high tech for a long time. I mean, are you originally from Virginia?
I grew up in New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay.
I worked for Bell Laboratories.
Ah, there we go. There's the connection.
For 14 years.
Okay.
And then I started my own company. And for the entire time that I worked at Bell Laboratories, I was working on mobile telephone.
Right.
My initial job was, I was a programmer. So my initial job was to write simulations on how a mobile phone system would actually work.
So you have an electrical engineering degree or something?
I think it's in mathematics.
Mathematics.
But
that does explain, however, why you are so good at explaining music theory to people. You've done it in the Songwriters Association. Not everybody can do that. You've got a couple of your standard pitches where you break down, what is it, Somewhere Over the Rainbow or Amazing Grace or something, right? and you've explained it to the songwriters, and it really helps people learn. That's magic too. Not everybody has a talent for that.
I taught school for high school and junior high school for 5 years before I went to Bell Labs.
Oh, well, there we go, Renaissance man. I knew there was something interesting about you. And you also mentioned that you have kids, right?
Three stepkids.
Okay, yep, three, all right.
They're all grown up now.
Okay. And you live at the lake. And since you moved to the area, you lived at the lake?
Yeah, we lived at the lake since early 2000.
Okay.
2000.
Yeah. I love your house, yeah.
Doesn't seem like 20 years.
Have you known Harold at Blackwater Studios all that time? Or what?
No, I met Harold. When we first moved here, we lived 5 years at a different house further down. Further down river. And when we moved here, I had heard there was a recording studio here. And then it was Greg that said,
Greg Trefidlo, right?
Come over and help me do something or other. And so, yeah, that's how I met Harold.
When did you start? How long have you been playing guitar, Larry? When did you start? And when did you start writing songs? How long have you been a musician?
Well, let's see. I started playing when I was 15.
Okay. So you've been playing
since high school.
Yeah, high school, right. When did you start writing songs? Right away or not till later?
I think, stuff that I wrote in high school is just pretty stupid, though.
Well, yeah, maybe, but still counts.
Yeah, I've been writing. When you start playing guitar, you start to gravitate towards guitar players, right?
Sure.
So your friends, most of my friends are musicians.
Yeah, makes sense.
And a good number of those write also.
Yeah.
And that, that trend has followed me everywhere I've gone.
Right. So if you wanted to tell someone what your music sounded like, had to name two or three artists that were like you, a constellation of artists between which you might fit, who would those people be?
I don't know. That's really tough for me.
That's tough for anybody, but
I tend to try to write in different ways on purpose.
Oh, you're one of those. Okay.
But more recently, I would say Tom Waits has a pretty large influence.
Tom Waits.
Folk acts like Dylan and Peter Paul and Mary and Paul Simon.
Okay, sure.
Beatles and the Stones. And
yeah, of course.
But Tom Waits
tell
has
me about Tom
some
Waits,
sort
yeah.
of crazy special attraction for me.
Yeah, how's that?
Because he can be a mix of really, really gritty and incredibly sensitive in the same song.
Yeah. He can mix it up, for sure. I was listening to him just the other day. What was it? Oh, Hope That I Don't Fall in Love with You.
Well, yeah, that's one of his really early ones.
Yeah, early, right? But it's also poignant, tender, heartfelt song in its own way. I mean, it's a little dark.
Yeah, but even in that song, the setting is a bar.
Exactly. True. So talk to me about the song, Missing You. Now, here's what I want to do. I want to play the recording, and let's see if this works. I want to play the recording, and we can talk over it if you want to, and maybe you'll have some comments to make or not. But I think I want to play the Panini Brothers version of it first. But so talk about the Panini Brothers first before you talk about it. How many of you are there?
There's five of us.
Five. And did you meet, how long ago did you meet?
Well, let's see. I met Mike DeGiorgi through a mutual friend who knew that we both played guitar and wrote. And she invited us over for dinner.
Okay.
And that's how I met Mike.
How you met Mike DeGiorgi in the first place. Okay.
Yes. I met Mike through a mutual friend. So we were playing a little bit, and then, so this is prior to 2007.
Okay.
Around 2007, when I was having my shop built, so I was interviewing architects and builders, and I met Chip.
This is Chip, the lead guitar player.
So I, you know, I hired Chip to design and work with me to design the shop, and then to build it. So. So he's over once and we're discussing, you know, I had made some crazy sketches of stuff that I thought might work. And
okay.
So he's over, we're going through this stuff and he notices my guitar in the corner. And he says, are you playing? I said, yeah. He says, oh, I play too. And
so you didn't even know he was a guitar player.
He, in fact, was kind of like a closet guitar player. He wouldn't play out in public.
Oh,
yeah, so I asked him if he just wanted to jam sometime. Then he was building a house next to Mike DeGiorgi. And he's telling me about this guy. He says, you know, I know there's another guitar player. He lives next door to the house I'm building. And, you know, he's done some recording and stuff. I'm thinking, oh, well, who is he? You know, and he tells me who it is. I said, well, geez, I know him.
I know that guy.
So, you know, we started to jam, the three of us, and sometimes with Mike Dietrich also.
Okay, right.
And then Chip started to build another house for Mark Earnhardt, our keyboard player.
Okay.
So we invite him over and we have the keyboard player. Then I guess Scott's wife was a friend of Mike's wife. And so we asked him to sit in with us and that the current state of the band.
Yep.
So that's we're great. Like a real garage band.
Right. Right. Okay. Let's cue up the song. Let me see if I can cue this up.
Quiet night, street lights dim. I see Bobby, nah, that ain't him. And I'm missing you. The AC hums on the windowsill. Couples stroll like couples will. And I'm missing you. Been so long, day by day. I can't recall that thing you'd say. Been a while. Heard that tune, contemplate the August moon. Taxi runs a midnight fare. Nighthawks dream, I sit and stare. Missing you. And hope without a prayer.
fire. Still somehow I'll get it right, but not right now. Lonely night, who would guess? Nighthawk's dream, but I digress. And I'm missing you. Missing you. Missing you.
Yeah, man, that's very nice, very nice. How long ago was that recorded? It was written in 2010.
It was recorded in 2015.
2015, okay. That recorded at Blackwater Studios, right? So, for me, Larry, you talked about this. One of my favorite things about your songwriting, in particular, lyrically, is that your songs are very sparse. There's a lot of space in the song. Not a whole lot of words. It's never hurried. And this is a perfect example of that style. Not complex lyrics, but very subtle. And I love it. So tell me about how the song came about. And for the songwriters out there, did you write the music first and the lyrics? And what order did it come about?
I generally start with a rhythm and a chord progression. In this particular case, I had the chord progression rattling around in my head for about 30 years.
30 years. Wow.
And I didn't really know what to do with it.
It was mature.
And then, are you familiar with the painting called Nighthawks by Edward Hopper?
No, I am not, at least not by name. I was going to ask you about Nighthawks, though.
I really love this painting.
Okay.
And
Edward Hopper.
Edward Hopper. Can I share my screen?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right,
go ahead.
Yeah, I'll
try this. Yeah. There it is. Look at that. Oh.
This is Nighthawks.
Oh, that's the Nighthawks? Oh, well, I know this painting. Everybody knows this painting.
Yeah, everybody knows this painting, right? It's a very large painting. It's about 5 foot by 7 feet.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
But can you see my cursor moving?
Yes.
Okay. So in this picture, I was kind of imagining myself sitting on this stoop over here, looking out at the street. And seeing maybe, not a lot of people, but people walking by. And, it's a dimly lit street at night, kind of lonely.
Yep.
So that's what inspired the song.
Wow.
So
okay.
The other thing that I was trying to do, and this goes back to Tom Waits. By the way, Tom Waits has an album called Nighthawks at the Diner.
Right.
It was also inspired by this.
Yeah, no, it's coming together now. Yep.
It's mostly him just telling stories and then singing these songs. So he tells these stories in between as introductions to his songs. It sounds like he's in a jazz bar, jazz club.
Yep.
When actually the way they made the recording was they invited an audience into the studio and actually set it up like a bar.
Is that right?
Like a jazz club with food and everything. And so they react to him,
Okay.
So anyway, so this is my inspiration.
Wow.
The other Tom Waits inspiration for this was my thought about making it jazzy.
Yeah.
And not describing any particular incident. I wanted to sort of repaint this picture.
Mm-hmm.
In the lyrics.
Yeah, I think you achieved that.
Okay, so I didn't want it to be, about a lost love or someone dying. So I just wanted to create the scene and have somebody missing somebody. That's it.
I think you did more than that, Larry. I'm reading your lyrics in front of me now as I look at the painting. And I have to say, if I'd have known the name of the painting, I might have put two and two together quickly with your lyrics. But I really think you captured the mood of the painting for sure. But I think you added to the painting. There's no couples strolling in the painting, but Bobby, is that him? I don't know who that is in the picture. Maybe. But I could imagine you sitting on the stoop over there. I think you definitely added to it. This is very cool. Brings a whole new meaning to the song for me. Very nice.
You know, it's one thing I remember specifically about this song when I brought it to SVSA is that one of your suggestions...
My suggestion.
...was the line, couples stroll like couples will, which I ended up using. But what's interesting is that I already had that as a possibility.
So I don't get a co-write.
But you suggested it as well. And that's what I ended up using.
So what was the original lyric?
Couples stroll like Jack and Jill.
Oh, right. Okay, I remember that now. I remember it, yep.
My lyrics are sparse because I tell my story and that's the end of it, you know? And I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah, I knew that was going to come up. Yeah, I think you have more to say than you think you do. Because you're one of those people, and we talk about this in the group, that it's dependent on the style of music, but it's also dependent on the person. Some people like to lay it all out and leave no doubt about what is being talked about in the song, no ambiguity in the lyrics and so forth. And some of the people in the group don't like that. They get upset by that when there's some ambiguity in the lyrics.
Right, exactly.
When some of us, and I think you and I are in that camp, and Mike DeGiorgi is in that camp, we say, well, okay, you as a listener get to decide. It doesn't have to be all laid out. It's up to you. But you also leave a lot of pace, a lot of space, but also in the chord movement, right? You're facile with the jazz style chords that you use, and you work that into everything you do, that I've ever heard anyway. Even the country and the blues stuff. I find that admirable, and I try to emulate it sometimes. In fact, I find it so admirable that that's why I called upon you recently with Key Lime Pie to help me with that one. Help me, Larry. Help me dress this song up. And the song took on a life that I never knew it would have once I asked you for help. And therefore, I give you a co-write on that song because it wouldn't be what it is without you.
You know, I don't need any credit, Mike, but it was funny because when you sent the song over, I'm thinking, yeah, that's okay. That's good. I mean, I like the song. And then you asked for help. And I knew exactly what to do. I wasn't sure that it would be suitable for what you wanted. I thought maybe I was going far afield from what your original intent was. But I said, these are the things I would do.
And I believe I used exactly what you sent me. I intended to anyway. And it worked out really well. Thank you so much. Well, so I got to tell you, Larry, I think I've had a lot of fun here today. And I just kind of wanted to mention, you have Blackwater River Guitars and BlueRidgeLuthiers.com. You're part of a Luthiers Association, but Blackwater River's Guitar, that's your site, correct?
Yeah, it's terribly out of date.
Okay. One more question. I want to ask you one more question about Missing You, about the song. What, in general, is it like when you bring a song to the Panini Brothers, to the band? And what was it like when you brought this one?
That's a really interesting question, because when the band first started playing together, getting together and jamming, you know, we were jamming on rock and roll and blues tunes and, you know, classic rock. And
really?
And then at one point we started, you know, taking a classic song and just injecting something completely different into it.
Yeah.
And And then we thought, well, you know, we've a bunch of us have written some songs, so let's try to play some of these things. And we found out that playing our original stuff was actually more fun.
Yeah.
Because there was no expectation about what it should sound like. Yeah,
okay. So you were originally a covers band.
Well, we never played out, though.
Oh, yeah, I see.
We were just jamming once a week. A closet cover band. Now, what's interesting, so the band is playing all these, you know, rock and roll tunes and blues tunes. A lot of blues tunes because that's Chip's, you know, game.
Chip's a blues guy, yep.
And so bringing a song like this was scary. And yeah. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, they thought we could never play that song.
Well, you proved them wrong.
You know, to start with. And it's DeGiorgi and I who are persistent in saying, let's try it. Just try something, you know. Here's the feel that I'm looking for. Just, you know, play anything at all. And, you know, we do a lot of arguing about it. And
you're still friends. How did it go in the studio? Was it a million takes, or did Chip just nail it the first time, or how did it go?
Chip is a jammer. He, you know, there are some songs where he'll play the same signature lick, you know, that sort of defines a song. But when it comes to soloing and introductions and stuff like that, you know, he just wings it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And most of the time he gets it really, really good. And this particular one, he nailed it, his part, in the studio first take.
Really?
It was me and my guitar part that I had to redo.
And did you come out in the order that you had it in your head? Did it evolve? Well, how did it go?
Oh, it evolved. I think perhaps even in the studio on the first. No, it was shortly before we went to the studio, the song changed.
Really?
Towards the end, we would play the song, the last verse, and just take it out. And somewhere along there, just when we were rehearsing, I just changed it completely. I stopped. Let me see. Yeah, in the second bridge, been a while still somehow, I'll get it right, but not right now. I stopped. Yeah. And just let something ring and then took it. And so the band stopped. And then I just started playing again slower and then came back in and I cued them into when I thought they should come in. And that's the way we ended up doing the song. So.
Yeah, that's good. Now you said the band stopped. So you played it live in the studio?
Are you talking about the studio?
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. So this was a live performance.
This was just in my studio here. We were just rehearsing. And I changed the way I played it, and they just stopped because they didn't know what was going on. And then we fell back into it, and I said, yeah, this is the way I want to do it.
Yep.
We wanted the feeling more of a garage band, I think. Okay. And so we did... We did things live for the most part.
Yeah, okay. And it sounds like it. It sounds natural.
And then we fixed some parts.
Yep.
You know, that we needed to fix. But we wanted that feeling of playing in the band together at the same time.
Well, Larry, thanks so much for doing this again, for taking a chance on sitting here with me for an hour and talking about stuff. I can't think of anything I'd rather do. This is a lot of fun. I really appreciate your time.
Mike, it's an honor to be asked to do this. And by the way, I need to interview you.
Oh. I
would
love
that. One of your songs on the record, too.
Oh, that'd be great. Sure.
So you need to think about what song you want to be interviewed for.
Oh. Well, you know, at this point, the first thing that came to mind, my favorite song that I've ever written is always the last one I've written. So maybe we should talk about Key Lime Pie, the one you helped with.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Larry. I won't keep you any longer. It's been almost an hour. Thank you so much.
It's been fun.
Have a good night.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Hi, this has been Everybody Talking with me, Mike Frankie. Thanks for listening.